At Cedar, we focus on helping people reach a life of sobriety and recovery. This path also includes an emphasis on a positive lifestyle. What options are available to help someone both preserve their recovery while enjoying life? On this episode of Through the Trees, we sit down with Cedar's Jay Voigt and the founder of Sober AF Entertainment, Duke Rumley. We talk about organizations that provide safe spaces in recovery, including through such venues as sports and music. A culture of excitement and activity can be blended well with a life of addiction recovery. Addiction treatment healthcare is vast territory, much of it having yet to be fully charted. It also is a field with some of the most passionate and interesting of clinicians. Each week, we walk the addiction treatment trails, learning from experts of all backgrounds and specialties. My name is Pat Failing, and I'm an addiction psychiatrist for Cedar in the University of Colorado. You're listening to Through the Trees, the Cedar Addiction Treatment Podcast. Well, this is Dr. Pat Failing, and we're sitting down here at Cedar, and I'm really happy as part of our Through the Trees podcast to welcome Duke Rumley as part of Sober AF Entertainment, we also call SAFE. And I'm also joined by Jay Voigt, the Director of Operations here at Cedar. And we're talking about, I think, a pretty positive topic in recovery, which is the concept of the safe space. And we're gonna focus on this today, touching on themes of peer support and how it looks like in our country and different organizations that have made a dent in the world of addiction and recovery and are making a difference. So guys, thank you so much for sitting down and joining us on our show.
Thanks, Dr. Failing, and thanks, Jay, for this opportunity. Duke Rumley, Executive Director and founder of Sober AF Entertainment. And yes, AF means what you think it does. Doesn't really stand for anything. We are Sober AF Entertainment, which creates an acronym of SAFE.
And give us the background of this. How long has your organization been in existence?
So Sober AF Entertainment has been around. We're coming up on 18 months. So June 1st was our first event of 2018. We did Base Nectar, and we did a sober tailgate outside of that as a connector for people before the concert. And last weekend, we did the Colorado State versus Air Force football game, and that was our 51st event. So we've done 51 events in a little under a year and a half. And this coming weekend, we're in L.A. for the USC-UCLA football game. So that will be our 51st event. So really excited that we have survived our first 18 months and that we've done 51 events. And we have been out there really creating a safe space at music festivals, concerts, and sporting events.
Sure. And so it sounds like it functions on a national scale.
So of the 50 events, 40 have been in Colorado. So we really came out of Colorado. And how this came about was a little over a year and a half ago, my daughter texted me from Red Rocks and she wanted to take an Uber home from a concert. And all of the people that she had gone down with were taking ecstasy and she didn't feel safe going home with this group. And I'm a guy who's 30 years sober and thought this is ridiculous that this is the culture this kid is growing up in, is this Molly ecstasy party culture. And I'm afraid I was going to get a phone call that she had done cocaine with fentanyl in it and she was dead. So we came up with this idea of starting this nonprofit.
Okay, wonderful. So you identified a problem in the moment and said maybe we need some more resources for people.
What really came across to me was when I got sober, what helped me stay sober and make sobriety cool was there was a group called Wharf Rats. And it was a sober support group inside Grateful Dead shows. And at about 6 weeks sober, I went to a Grateful Dead show. They had, I ran into this group and they did a quasi 12-step meeting during intermission. They had people at the table the whole time. And I really didn't need a meeting, but I did need the idea that I'm not the only one in this group or at this concert who is sober. So flash forward 30 years later, Watching my kids not really struggle, but just it seems like that community, that generation. You know, if you go to a sporting event like a football game, it's all beer pong in the parking lot. If you go to a concert, it's a lot of kids on different psychedelic drugs. So I just thought somebody needed to do something, and I thought that I kind of thought that there was a niche, you know, if you want to help kids not die on fentanyl, maybe we come up with some secondary culture or an alternative culture. So that was kind of the thinking. And here we are a year and a half later, and, you know, we're still alive and actively pursuing a national sober tailgate movement, which also has access to software which will allow anyone anywhere to host their own sober tailgate. So ideally, we throw, you know, 20 tailgates a year, and then the community throws another 100 or 200 tailgates at their own town.
Well, wonderful. Let's talk a little bit about the world of peer support and providing opportunities and safe spaces for people historically. This is, I guess, rooted in AA or other things. What are your guys' thoughts on this?
Dr. Fanley, thanks for having me on. This is Jay Voigt. I can speak a little bit from Cedar's perspective. Cedar was founded 14 years ago and came out of the 12-step recovery movement. And Cedar was very much focused on helping patients, people that we treat, engage in recovery, particularly through 12-step programs. And 12-step programs are great and wonderful and work for a lot of folks. But there's even a bigger subset of folks that the 12-step doesn't work for them for whatever reason. So what we've seen in the past 10 years in the addiction treatment world is alternatives or additional ways to support recovery, particularly around peer culture. So, for example, Phoenix Multisport is an organization that we partner with where individuals engage in sporting events, you know, with other sober people.
So it's rebranded the Phoenix now.
Thank you.
Yes.
The Phoenix. Sober AF, for example.
Entertainment.
Sober
AF.
Sober AF Entertainment.
Thank you.
Cedar has a relationship with where we provide, we pay a monthly fee, and they host events and invite our staff and our patients to participate in those events. So it's an alternative. This is a new way of engaging people in sober activities. Same thing with peer coaching. It's another way in the past 10 years we've been trying to engage people in recovery in the non-traditional sense. So the idea is we're looking to provide alternative places, groups, and organizations for people to plug into as part of their recovery journey.
So to that point, I just want to kind of say, you know, it took me a long time to kind of realize that the 12-step community is not the majority of people who claim to be in recovery from drug abuse or alcohol abuse. So the CDC says there's 24.5 million people who self-report being in recovery from drug abuse or alcohol abuse. And if you speak with the General Service Office out of New York, you know, they don't quite have active numbers, but it appears that the membership, as far as literature being bought, is on a great decrease. So it appears it looks like it peaked in 2000 at a little over 1.5 million people. And it's for the first time in the life of Alcoholics Anonymous, it seems like that membership is on decline. So if it's 1 million people and there's 24.5 million people claiming to be in recovery, you know, we're looking at 5%. So it's a pretty, to me, shocking number that there is a much larger community outside of the traditional AA community who are actually in some type of recovery.
Do you have any theories on that, or what? Why any sort of trends, somewhat downward trends of 12-step?
I think that a lot of those people have gone to other 12-step possibly meetings, so outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, maybe Narcotics Anonymous. There's Crystal Meth Anonymous, there's Marijuana Anonymous, there's probably another, you know, 5 or 10 other narcotic Derivatives, that's anonymous.
There's what, Smart Recovery, Celebrate Recovery.
Correct.
Life Ring. We've been working with a few of those different organizations also at Cedar as well. So there's kind of a wide selection that people can access. I guess it's all under the general umbrella of what we'd call peer support.
Correct. So I agree with that. You know, I think the flip side is Alcoholics Anonymous was started by 1935, technically, and the book was written, I think, in 1938, 1939, but it hasn't changed much, and kind of the face of Alcoholics Anonymous has been a white male in his 40s or 50s, and I don't know if that is part of the issue of attracting new demographics when that demographic has been decreasing as a percentage in the United States.
And Jay, do we have any Cedar-specific data? Do we know how many people seem to use peer support following treatment? Do we have anything about that?
Yes. So we used to offer recovery coaching standard for every one of our patients coming through our program. And we had about a 60% adoption rate at that time. Once we started charging a minimal fee for peer recovery coaching, it dropped to about 10% of our folks interested in paying for recovery coaching. Nationally, I mean, yes, we're seeing more of a movement, but there's not a whole lot of empirically validated data to speak to the specifics of how somebody could be successful or not in recovery as it relates to coaching. Anecdotally, and from the other literature, we know that one of the pillars of somebody in recovery is developing a social support network. And so peer recovery does fall into that social support network. So I think we could generalize a little bit around that.
I know that there's one of the greatest strengths of a 12-step program is the anonymity that helps promote the safety. But I know that one of the struggles we have from a healthcare perspective is it's markedly harder to research and actually conduct any sort of clinical studies looking at AA. I'm not aware of a lot.
I think it's valid. Yeah, it's a difficult population to study. And most of the studies are self-report. So yeah, not like double-blind placebo longitudinal studies,
right,
you know, like we're accustomed to with other things. But Duke, I mean, maybe you could speak to being a person in long-term recovery. You gave a story about kind of what that was like for you being at a concert. What are you seeing with your current folks that are becoming engaged in sober AFE?
I would say we've had a few aha moments. And one of my aha moments was we did a sober tailgate at the Phoenix for a Colorado Rockies baseball game. And it was a great location. It's about five blocks away. We invited a bunch of different sober living homes to bring their clientele. And it was just this amazing scene of kind of watching these kids. And we had about 100 kids show up. I think we sold about 200 tickets. And at the tailgate, being so appreciative for a popsicle, so appreciative for a hot dog or a hamburger, and just realizing, like, this is a community that needs another layer of support, you know, versus, you know, trying to host a sober tailgate at a concert at Fish. So we've had some people reach out like, hey, I'm going to Fish. You guys are going to have a sober tailgate at it. And typically this is a guy who flies in from Austin. He's staying at a $300 night hotel. He's 10 years sober with his buddies. That group really doesn't need another layer of support as badly as kind of this newer. So new sobriety is awkward. And what we're trying to create is a place they can get a sober wingman or sober wing woman in that new sobriety and kind of push through the first 10 minutes of that awkwardness at a sober tailgate. So what we'll do is we'll have wiffle ball set up, or we'll have, you know, a TV with a sports game on and some food. We're looking to add actually a trailer that we can pull televisions out and have an Xbox connected to it so kids can play a couple games versus each other, and really trying to help kids kind of push through any awkwardness that they might feel, some anxiety they might feel. And I think once they can push past that, you know, they really see the benefits of doing something in a large social group of sober people versus trying to go to a Rockies game by yourself or go to a concert by yourself.
I know you mentioned previously about the average 40-year-old white male demographic of AA. Are the people that are using some of your services tend to be in their, late teens, 20s, 30s? Is that a little bit younger demographic?
So it is. I would say kind of the typical user, depending on the event, is in their 20s or 30s. We don't have any age requirements, and we also don't have any true sobriety requirements. We just ask that they're sober at the event and during the event. But to your point, really, the group that seems to have resonated with what we're trying to do has been more early sobriety in their 20s to early 30s.
Okay, wonderful.
And really a group that probably needs a little more support. So, you know, we're walking into Coors Field. We're walking into a music festival sponsored by Bud Light. It is just so in your face how the alcohol companies are really sponsoring all these events, which is great because it really reduces the cost for the rest of us. But why don't we give these kids a chance at least to be able to live, if they choose, in a substance-free environment, to be able to have fun in a substance-free environment.
Actually, I was very curious about that in terms of just your guys' views. Have sporting events and music venues always been so backed by alcohol? Like that, I think it's very eye-opening how much alcohol is consumed at all these events. Was it always that way?
So, Pat, in preparation for this talk, I did some research on NFL football games. And there were differing numbers out there. One study I came across said 90% of adults watching a football game are going to consume alcohol. Another one, it was low, was 40% of adults watching a football game would consume alcohol. Point being is the numbers are all over there, and it's probably intentional that the alcohol industry doesn't publish data on, you know, the misuse of alcohol. But we do know that, you know, 5% of Americans are going to consume 75% of America's alcohol. That happens regardless of whether it's a sporting event.
Sure. I was curious, do either of you guys have any opinions or views on trends in what we're seeing in America in terms of how many people are using alcohol, how many people are binge drinking on alcohol, how many people are choosing to drink less? I feel like that has been talked about a little bit, this idea of trying to consume less alcohol for health and wellness reasons. Any thoughts on this?
Well, Pat, I think the trends that we're seeing are don't just apply to alcohol, but to food, to marijuana, to drug use. I mean, we see things wax and wane. Right now, it feels like there's a lot more discussion about deprivation, depriving for a period of time, something, whether that's food or alcohol, and celebrating it like it's an accomplishment, almost kind of reinforcing or normalizing that it's okay to binge on X, Y, and Z.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that, like, the idea of, like, Sober January?
Sober October also.
Yeah. Because you've been heavily drinking through the year. Just so long as you abstain those months, you reset, I guess.
Correct. So if I were to say to you, Pat, I'm going to do no green beans November, it sounds pretty ridiculous, and you look at me like I'm crazy. Because you haven't heard of anyone having a problem with green beans, I suppose, and with alcohol, the stigma attached to it, I think people have more skin in the game.
So I know there is a sober curious movement that is happening. And I think this next generation, kids who are just in their 20s right now, are drinking a lot less than previous generations. And I think there's a lot of reasons for it. Part of it is financial, you know, going out and, you know, beer tabs getting out of control. To your point, the wellness component of it. So we are seeing for the first time sober bars opening up in New York and Chicago. There is a company called Bar Zero here in Denver that is a kind of a sober support catering company. So I think that this is a wave that is building still, and I'm sure it'll happen nationally to some component. And that's what we're hoping Sober AF Entertainment does become, is a sober meetup where people can host their own sober support tailgates at different events. But I do feel like this next generation drinks less and probably smokes weed more, is kind of what the data is coming in. And it's probably for a bunch of different reasons.
Do you have any kind of basic data or assumptions about the people using your services? Do they fall under being more recovery, like that they identified actually having a substance use disorder? Or do you think there's more of a sober curious component or some of both?
So of the 50 events that we've done, we've had 2,600 people join us. That is kind of the hard data that we can provide as far as tickets sold and different events. The recovery community is a lot easier to find than the sober curious community. You know, it's hard finding the 33-year-old mom who's aged out of it, or, you know, a 22-year-old kid who's had a bad experience and, you know, pretends to drink, but, you know, really doesn't drink anymore. So the fact that we're a year and a half old, we've kind of reached out originally more to treatment centers, intensive outpatients, sober living homes, kind of the business end of recovery. And, you know, we're trying to reach out through different news announcements, through podcasts, through Facebook, through Instagram, and kind of telling the story of, you know, if you do want to have fun and be in an environment where there's no whiskey drunk guy around you, we have a place for you.
Sure.
And, you know, we would love ideas of how to kind of reach other groups that are into this sober curious movement.
So I actually went to an event recently and noticed that there were some families there. So it wasn't just, you know, single people identifying as being in recovery. It just seemed like a bunch of average folks hanging out, having a good time without a drink in their hand. Is that common?
So it kind of varies from tailgate to tailgate. We were in Florida, in Jacksonville, Florida, for the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, which is the Florida-Georgia game. And we had, in that tailgate scenario, it was 25 to 30 kids more in their 20s who came. And it wasn't as much kind of a family scene. The Air Force game that we did at Colorado State last weekend was a lot of families. So I think it kind of varies from location to location. Ideally, we get a little more publicity, but we definitely want families to know.
Experience the compassionate care of CEDAR, the Center for Dependency, Addiction, and Rehabilitation. Located at the University of Colorado Hospital, we manage complex health needs in addition to addiction. To learn more, visit cedarcolorado.org.
Have you had any experiences of things going awry? Like where, because you're, it's kind of like you're bringing a sober, safe space into what could be kind of a volatile arena. You mentioned like the world's largest cocktail party. Any time where that it actually creates any sort of conflict, where people, they make you feel like you're not welcome or anything like that?
So Dr. Pat, great question. And yes, we have made lots of mistakes along the way. And that's how you learn. We get really good seats at the Rockies, and we've had people kind of sneak into our section because we have these great seats. And, you know, I've learned what to do and what not to do. So the first time it happened, I watched these guys order four beers in our section. I look over and I realize they're not with us. And I turned to the 110 people who came with us and was like, oh, we should help these guys out. And I asked them how much four beers were. And four beers at the Rockies was $48. So I felt really bad for them. I'm like, we should all chip in some money. So I was like guilting and shaming them out of our section to some degree. And that's not the best way to handle it. So we've kind of learned, like, you talk to the beer vendors, make sure they don't come through. When we do football games, we have a big screen TV, and not other tailgates around us have the big screen TV. So what we've also learned, like, our tailgates have to be badass, right? They cannot be some lame tailgate next to somebody else's. I mean, it has to be just as good. These kids realize this. So because we have the TV and other tailgates don't, I'll look around and there'll be somebody with a beer in their hand watching the game. And I got to walk up and say, hey, this is the sober section. So, you know, you're going to trigger somebody with that beer. You got to get it out of here. And they respect that. And it's pretty good. I was one time with my daughter and she had five of her sorority sisters with her. And we were at a Rockies game sitting in the back row taking some photos. And this guy saw these cute girls. So he sat down next to him with a beer in his hand. And he didn't see me sitting with these girls. And he's like, hey, girls, what are you doing after this? And my daughter kind of looked at him and said, well, I think we're hanging out with my dad. And I kind of leaned forward and said, hey, what up? And he took a sip of his beer and boogied out of there. And then my daughter turned to her friends and she said, we're safe in the dad section. So, you know, to some degree, I think we're creating a safe environment for women that's not quite out there at any of these events.
Yeah, interesting. So that's another layer to it. I didn't even think about that, how much of this is just trying to be more about the event and have just safer boundaries where people just feel just more comfortable, even something even beyond just sobriety comfortable.
Right. As men, like, you know, we're protecting our sobriety by coming to this group. But as women who really have to fear for being roofied, you know, they really have to watch their drinks and go as a pack of women and just kind of all of the extra effort women have to make that we don't even realize because of this culture that they're afraid about that's out there. You know, so ideally, that's what we're also trying to build is a safe environment for women. And, you know, I think if you subtract alcohol and drugs from a sporting event, you know, the tribalism that can show up where my team versus your team is tightly reduced. So we haven't had any fights, any buddy getting anybody's face via Teams. Now we're going to test that because in 2 weeks we're at Alabama-Auburn, the Iron Bowl. So we'll be hosting a sober tailgate on the 30th in Alabama. And we've never done anything in Alabama yet. So I would love to give you the update, but I think subtracting alcohol, everyone kind of realizes we do have a common connection, and that's typically some type of recovery.
Do you have any kind of visionary ideas of expanding safe spaces into other activities?
So we're open to expansion. I think as a new nonprofit, you stay a little more focused, and then you expand and see what kind of what fits. So I really think 2020, the pivot will be more, how do we promote our services to the rural communities of Colorado? How do we help Pueblo? How do we help, Grand Junction? How do we help, Glenwood Springs areas? So we were recruited to host a sober support tent at a big country this year. And unfortunately we had already, had a sober tailgate at the CSU-CU football game at Mile High. So we weren't able to do that. But I would say kind of my vision is we host 30 events. We promote the do-it-yourself component of this. And we see where that grows and where does the community take it. Like if they want to take it to a, you know, a sober ski night at Ski Stone, Keystone. That was a Freudian slip. I called it Ski Stone for a long time. Keystone. So they have night skiing. So does that community want to host a sober tailgate? And really see if we can kind of be a national meetup for this recovery community and the sober curious community.
How about the idea of a sober bar? I know that some New York has had some of that. How about Denver? Is there any talk about sober establishments, like late night recreational establishments that would be sober?
So to my knowledge, no. There is nothing in Colorado that is geared for a kind of a sober,
I guess nightlife.
Right, nightlife bar, restaurant per se. So as a guy who's kind of out there trying to, you know, network with the collegiate recovery community nationally, trying to find other sober pockets. We're super unorganized, it appears, as a community. Locally, you have Young People in Recovery is a community-based. They're trying to set up recovery-ready communities nationally. We mentioned the Phoenix. The Phoenix is probably the best example of somebody who's been around and has really gone from the pregnancy stage all the way to having the kid, and it's a real company up and running that's got true funding and has a national presence. I want to say they're in almost 25 or 30 states. I mean, they're in more than half the states in the United States.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And once again, that's what we used to refer as Phoenix Multisport, but once again, it's just called Phoenix.
Correct,
it's
the Phoenix.
So like a sober fitness recreational community.
Correct. I mentioned SoBar. That is a company that I think is going to be training people in recovery how to cook, and they will do catering to different events. So we are going to be using them in 2020 to cater some of our events, kind of as a partnership and really helping promote their their brand. But I would say, to your point, I don't know if there's enough want yet in Denver for really a late night sober restaurant bar.
Isn't it fascinating? We have like such large forces. I know there's, we also have what, Great American Beer Festival.
Yeah. So, yeah. There's no money in abstinence. None. Trust me. I've tried to find it.
Yeah. Well, very fascinating.
So Duke, how could listeners potentially support Sober AFE going forward if they're interested in the work that you're doing?
Well, you can go to our website, soberafe.com. We don't make any money on the ticket sales. We're actually donating, or we get people to donate money for the food. So it's a very bad business model, but we're working on grants and some corporate sponsors. So we really appreciate Cedar for being a charter member of Sober AFE. But ideally, we want you to participate. So we'd love for you to come. We, you know, are looking for people to join the board. We are looking for any type of corporate donations would also be great. 2020 will be a really interesting year. We'll see so we know there's a need, right? 70,000 kids every year overdose and die on drugs. There's another 88,000 who die of alcoholism per year. So there is obviously this huge need. Is there a want? We're trying to figure out what that want looks like and how do we give it to the community. We're thinking, you know, we're the only ones who do it at sporting events, music festivals, and concerts. So we're pretty excited about that. And you can also check us out on Facebook. We are Sober AF Entertainment on Facebook. And like us there and follow what we do. And, you know, bring your kids. Have some fun. Come to a Rockies game half off or a Nuggets game half off. And we've been fortunate. We've had a great relationship with the University of Colorado. They this year gave us, you know, half off tickets for the CSU game and also the CU-USC game. So it was a big year with CU. So we appreciate them.
Okay. Well, this has been very good. I think this has talked about some really good topics in terms of the world of the safe space, peer support, grassroots organizations and nonprofits that are trying to meet a need and trying to help tap into the entertainment industry such that both people that are either in recovery or people that are interested in enjoying these events without alcohol or drug use can really partake and can really enjoy it. And I think it's wonderful. Once again, this is Dr. Pat Failing. This is our Through the Trees podcast here at Cedar. Gentlemen, do you have any final thoughts?
I'd just like to say, you know, thank you, Duke, for all your efforts with Sober AFE. Our patients here at Cedar and staff have really enjoyed it and appreciate it greatly.
Awesome. Thank you. I just want to say, if you're a parent, you have to protect your kids. You got to have this conversation. This is not our kids going out and smoking a little weed. These are our kids who have access to drugs that might kill them. So it's like no time before. You do not want to be on the other side of this conversation where a good friend or a friend of one of your kids, or God forbid, your own kid, has done a drug that had fentanyl in it, and you don't get them back. So that's my advice. Talk to your kids.
Okay. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you for listening to Through the Trees, the Cedar Addiction Treatment Podcast. Please visit cedarcolorado.org for a wide array of educational content about the disease of addiction and the science of recovery. If you or a loved one are considering Cedar and the University of Colorado Hospital for treatment, please speak with our admissions team at 720-848-3000. Cedar, the Center for Dependency, Addiction, and Rehabilitation, helping people build a life of recovery.